Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Reliving the horror of January the 6th in the trial of Donald J. Trump. I'm Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC.
We are going to the Capitol!
Letting the images speak for themselves. The former president's second impeachment trial, debating the constitutionality of the single charge, incitement of insurrection, for encouraging the deadly Capitol riot in the room where it happened. The president staying focused on his agenda.
His role should be currently focused on addressing the needs of the American people.
The priority, COVID relief. Who gets what, when, and the states that aren't waiting on Washington to cut a check. A deadly attack on a Minnesota health clinic. Tonight, searching for a motive. Plus, on the ground in Wuhan, the World Health Organization investigators released their findings on how COVID broke free. Good evening. The second impeachment trial of the 45th President of the United States began in the Senate today. The charge, incitement of insurrection. Today's debate focused on whether the trial itself is constitutional. And the Senate voted 56-44 that it is. Six Republicans joined all Democrats, Senators Cassidy, Collins, Murkowski, Romney, Sass, and Toomey. The former president's lawyers tried to make the case that it's not constitutional, and among other things, that he did not incite the attack of January the 6th on the Capitol. In short, the rioters and insurrectionists did wrong and should be prosecuted. The sitting president did nothing wrong, and his words are protected under the First Amendment. The Democratic managers argued otherwise, first by presenting into evidence a produced, edited video montage of the insurrection itself and the events that preceded it, arguing that none of it would have happened in the absence of the sitting president's words and actions. The video did not air here on CNBC, so now in our general news hour, we've decided to play it for you without interruption or manipulation of any kind, just as it was presented into evidence, profanity included. At its conclusion, we'll present our reporting on the details of the respective arguments and what's yet to come in this historic proceeding. Now, the video, as introduced by the House impeachment managers this afternoon.
We will stop the steal. Today I will lay out just some of the evidence proving that we won this election and we won it by a landslide. This was not a close election. And after this, we're going to walk down and I'll be there with you. We're going to walk down to the Capitol.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's take the Capitol.
Take the Capitol.
They came in duffel bags. Where the hell did they come from?
Vice President and the United States Senate.
off the sidewalk.
Stand up for him. Stand up for him. We are number York million to one out here, dude.
Take the ball.
The Constitution says you have to protect our country and you have to protect our Constitution. And you can't vote on fraud. And fraud breaks up everything, doesn't it? When you catch somebody in a fraud, you're allowed to go by very different rules. So I hope Mike has the courage to do what he has to do.
Talk about you,
take your guns.
We fight. We fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore.
Fuck you, USA! Fuck you, USA! Fuck you,
USA! So we're going to
walk down Pennsylvania Avenue. I love Pennsylvania Avenue. And we're going to the Capitol. And we're going to try and
give our Republicans, the weak ones, because the strong ones don't need any of our help. We're going to try and give them the kind of pride and boldness that they need to take back our country.
Get the fuck out of here, you traitors!
Get him back to the box!
Majority Leader.
We're debating a step that has never been taken in American history. President Trump claims the election was stolen. The assertions range from specific local allegations to constitutional arguments to sweeping conspiracy theories. But my colleagues, nothing before us proves illegality anywhere near the massive scale that would have tipped the entire election.
My challenge today is not about the good people of Arizona.
Senate will stand in recess until the call of the chair.
We'll pause.
Protesters are in the building.
Thank you.
This is ours!
Mr. Speaker, can I have order in the chamber?
The House will be in order. The House will be in order. Okay.
There's never been a time like this where such a thing happened, where they could take it away from all of us, from me, from you, from our country. This was a fraudulent election, but we can't play into the hands of these people. We have to have peace. So go home. We love you. You're very special. You've seen what happens. You see the way others are treated that are so bad and so evil. I know how you feel, but go home and go home in peace.
USA! 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 own counties, storm your own Capitol buildings, and take down every one of these corrupt motherfuckers. Hang them!
When the video ended, pool reporters say the Senate chamber was silent. The lead impeachment manager, Congressman Jamie Raskin, followed up with a harrowing account of what he personally witnessed on the House floor as the mob closed in.
All around me, people were calling their wives and their husbands, their loved ones, to say goodbye. Our new chaplain got up and said a prayer for us, and we were told to put our gas masks on. And then there was a sound I will never forget. The sound of pounding on the door like a battering ram. The most haunting sound I ever heard, and I will never forget it.
Congressman Raskin then turned it over to the defense. A source close to the former president's legal team tells NBC News their strategy was to lower the temperature from the Democrats' emotionally charged opening argument. CNBC's Ayman Javers now on the defense's counterargument. Ayman?
Yeah, Shep, look, after that powerful and emotional opening from the impeachment managers, Donald Trump's attorney came out and actually praised the impeachment managers for what he called their outstanding presentation. He acknowledged that the defense team had to change its tactics in response, and that may be why the defense presentation here seemed a little bit disjointed and rambling at parts. Now, Donald Trump's attorney, Bruce Castor Jr., urged senators not to give in to the emotion of the moment, and he spent a big chunk of his time praising senators for being extraordinary people and gallant men. He argued that Trump was simply engaging in free speech before the attack on the Capitol and said this impeachment is politically motivated.
Let's understand why we are really here. We are really here because the majority in the House of Representatives does not want to face Donald Trump as a political rival in the future. That's the real reason we're here.
We'll be voting to impeach.
The Trump team also played video of the Democrats calling for Trump's impeachment time and again throughout his presidency. David Schoen, the second attorney to speak for Trump, amplified the theme, accusing Democrats of dividing the country.
They tell us that we have to have this impeachment trial, such as it is, to bring about unity. But they don't want unity, and they know this so-called trial will tear the country in half, leaving tens of millions of Americans feeling left out of the nation's agenda, as dictated by one political party that now holds the power in the White House and in our national legislature.
Now, many Republicans are in a tough political spot here, worried about political revenge from the president's base if they cross the former president of the United States. But a number of Trump allies said today they were disappointed in the presentation that was made by the Trump defense team here. We saw Bill Cassidy, a Republican senator from Louisiana, come out and say that this was a disjointed and at times random presentation by the Trump lawyers. And that's why, Shep, he said he became one of the six Republicans to join with the Democrats today and vote to continue this trial, Shep.
Ayman Javers, live for us tonight. Ayman, thanks. Harry Littman now, former U.S. Attorney and Deputy Assistant Attorney General under President Clinton. Sir, thank you. Your first impressions.
Well, I have to echo what Ayman said, that you had the sense, first of all, that video presentation, I thought, was really very effective, the visceral terror that it captured. And although it seemed to just be a natural recitation of events, it was really expertly put together to emphasize the connection between what Trump said and the conduct of the mob, and really to bring home the abject terror of the day. It didn't seem at all overly dramatic after seeing it that Raskin would say, you know, people were calling to say goodbye and feared for their lives, and indeed many people died. It is true, we're told, that the former president's team then thought, we've got to switch our tactics and somehow bring down the temperature. And what followed was a fairly perplexing and not very strong, I have to say, argument that was long on sort of homilies but weak on substance. You saw, however, the bottom line, which is one and only one fewer Republican, John Cassidy, as Eamon mentioned, actually changed his vote, and there were still 44 Republicans to vote to actually close down the trial, notwithstanding what seemed a pretty lopsided presentation. Among other things, the House managers really had the time to coordinate, have very good dynamics in the different presenters, and the Trump lawyers who have just come to the job in the last few days seemed much more kind of from the hip, disjointed, as the word you've heard, and somewhat sentimental, but not very substantive.
Yeah. Harry, moving forward, the House managers, or the prosecutors, if you will, have the ability to ask for witnesses if they want. Should they? How would that impact the trial for both sides?
You know, witnesses are always really vivid and important evidence. I can think in particular, judging from this presentation, of a couple points where witnesses would be brutally effective. For example, we're told that there were eyewitnesses to then-President Trump reacting to the televised mayhem with delight. That would be very strong evidence and rebut the notion that he was somehow aghast. But I think the trend is toward no witnesses. Each side has different reasons. I think the Republicans don't want to hammer home the sort of vivid behavior and emotional instigation of the president. And the Democrats, for their part, I think are wary of going too long and keeping the new president from initiating his agenda. So it could still happen. But as of now, it seems most likely that the 16 hours of each side, if they're all taken up, will consist just of argument. Lawyers getting up and maybe saying, this witness said that, that newspaper article said this, but not putting people on the stand. That looks to be strongly where things are trending.
Harry Littman, thank you for your time. Appreciate it. During all of this, outside the Senate chamber, the Capitol remains an armed fortress. An 8-foot fence topped with barbed wire surrounds the building. At least 7,000 National Guard troops scattered across the D.C. metro area. The Pentagon announced the troops will stay there until the middle of next month. And the FBI is still searching for more people involved in the Capitol insurrection. NBC News has learned the agency has charged at least 215 people so far. 20 of those are military veterans, and at least 24 are suspected to have ties to right-wing extremism. A deadly shooting, or a nurse is dead after a shooting at a Minnesota health clinic that left others injured. Explosive devices uncovered at the scene. The gunman in custody. Tonight, the possible motive behind the attack this morning. Plus, fatigue, body pains, racing heartbeats, COVID symptoms that stick around long after the virus is long gone. Now, doctors trying to figure out why.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.
A deadly shooting and a possible attempted bombing at a health clinic in Buffalo. I should say Buffalo, Minnesota. The Wright County Sheriff there says a gunman opened fire, wounding 5 people. Our local station there reports one of the victims has died, a nurse. This is aerial video of the clinic where the shooting took place this morning, 40 miles northwest of Minneapolis. The state's governor says the attack also included some improvised explosive devices. It's unclear whether any of them went off or whether the bomb squad is now investigating. The suspect taken into custody, identified as Gregory Ulrich, 67 years old, lived in the area. Law enforcement says he was on their radar since 2003.
It's a history that spans several years, and there certainly is a history of him being unhappy with healthcare with the health care that he received. There's also, you know, within that history, nothing to indicate that that we would have been in the situation that we are at today.
Officials confirmed they found suspicious packages inside that clinic and at the motel where Ulrich was staying. Authorities say they do not believe he has any ties to terrorism. The local police chief fighting back tears today during a news conference.
Our heart breaks as a community. This is a day that no community would want to go through. We would not.
The surviving victims were sent to area hospitals. No word yet on their conditions. Well, Coca-Cola going green, and that's what's topping CNBC's On the Money. Coke bottles will now be made from 100% recycled materials. Executives say the redesign will reduce its use of new plastics by 20%. The company long criticized for being one of the biggest producers of plastic waste. The new bottles hit store shelves later this month. Aunt Jemima has a new name and logo. It's now called the Pearl Milling Company. The Aunt Jemima brand, long criticized for its racist stereotypes. The product will be in stores by June, they tell us. The company is said to also donate $1 million to empower and uplift black girls and women. And these Nikes, designed exclusively for former President Obama, up for sale at Sotheby's. The size 12.5 basketball shoes, believed to be one of only two pairs in existence. The presidential seal featured on the tongue, the number 44 embroidered on each toe. While President Obama did not wear these, they can be yours for $25,000. On Wall Street, the Dow down 10, the S&P down 9, the NASDAQ up 20. A year into this pandemic, and there's still so much about it that science has yet to explain, especially for those who thought they were done with the virus, only to face a whole new set of challenges. Months after COVID has left their bodies, navigating the debris field of unexplained symptoms.
They're saying it's COVID, but they're also saying they don't know what to do and they don't know how long it's going to last.
The dangerous plight of the COVID long hauler. The investigation into the crash that killed Kobe Bryant and 8 others is over. Tonight, why it's not being called an accident. And worse than the average cold temperatures, the punishing weather system that's brutalizing the Midwest.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour. Time for the top of the news. Pretty hard to change the world. But COVID-19 has done just that in ways we can measure, like the loss of life and livelihood, and in ways we can't, as it slowly chips away at our patience and our psyches. So whether you've had COVID or you haven't, we all feel its symptoms, its impact. Tonight, we'll look at a few of them, starting with a disturbing trend among COVID survivors. Medical problems they just can't explain months after the virus leaves their bodies. Mount Sinai's Center for Post-COVID Care estimates 10 to 30% of all COVID patients will have lingering symptoms. At best, that's still millions of Americans. CNBC's Andrea Day on COVID's long haulers.
Just wide awake because I can't sleep as per usual.
1 a.m. and another sleepless night for Katie Barber.
Sitting next to the toilet. Because I'm nauseous.
Before COVID, she ran marathons, training 10 miles a day. 10 months after she tested positive, the 27-year-old needs help just to move from room to room.
My heart races constantly.
I never thought I would be depending on my husband for everything in my life. I never thought I'd be calling my parents at
at 27 and say, I think I'm going to die tonight.
With no clear reason for her symptoms.
I was pretty much dismissed by every doctor and told that it's panic attack, it's in my head, I'll get better, ride it out.
Diane Washington also trying to ride it out, or today, just walk up the stairs.
Okay. You can help me?
Yes.
She had COVID back in August, but right now, even cooking dinner is a challenge.
I'm just too exhausted to even eat.
Her life, completely different before COVID.
I was going on hikes. I was going on vacation. I was still climbing trees. What can I do now? I can get up and I can get dressed. Then I have to take a break.
And her doctors can't say why the aftermath is so bad.
They're saying it's COVID, but they're also saying they don't know what to do and they don't know how long it's going to last.
Tyson Wrench also facing mysterious after effects.
Well, it's 3:30 in the afternoon here in Las Vegas, and I'm still not hungry.
10 months after COVID, and he has to force himself to eat.
It's going to hurt, but I will eat it.
Life-changing for the 47-year-old foodie. He's lost 40 pounds, and the pain when he eats is overwhelming.
I'm here at the doctor's. The pain's just gotten worse. This continues to suck.
I went in for a CT scan, and that came back completely normal.
So like many searching for answers, Tyson wound up in New York City at Mount Sinai Center for Post-COVID Care.
We're constantly looking at other reasons as to why the symptoms are happening. And I think that's the way we can dig deep enough to find out what's wrong with the patient.
The center, one of the first in the country to dig into the mystery and treat patients with post-acute COVID syndrome. More than 1,600 have come here so far from all walks of life and with lingering symptoms, including severe fatigue, shortness of breath, racing heart rates, and digestive issues. And it's not just the sickest left struggling months later.
Right now, when we look at our population of patients, the majority is actually those that stayed home with the milder symptoms.
So how much of the mystery is unlocked?
I would say, unfortunately, very little, just because there's so much. But day after day, I think the need is to chip at it and not relent so that eventually we can uncover the whole mystery.
And he says they're learning so much each day, he's very hopeful about the future. For the news, I'm Andrea Day.
Symptoms that continue, one effect of COVID. Substance abuse is another. In the United States, 13% of adults say they've started or increased using alcohol or drugs to deal with COVID-related stress. That's from the CDC. Nationwide, drinking has been rising since the pandemic began last year. But studies suggest it's increased at a much lower rate in the general population than in the LGBTQ community. The problem is not just alcohol abuse, it's also the lack of social bonding. Another study found that after COVID restrictions took effect, LGBTQ people aged 18 to 29 reported lower levels of hope for the future and a lower sense of connection to the LGBTQ community. For more on the side effects, Dr. Peter Hotez is here, co-director of the Center for Vaccine Development at Texas Children's Hospital. Doctor, thank you. It's become clear you don't have to physically have had COVID to get serious adverse effects from the lockdowns and the societal changes. How big of a concern is this in the medical community?
Yeah, you know, Shepard, I'm really glad you took the time to talk about some of these big issues because they are really substantial. First of all, the long haul story is one that has not really been fully told and one that needs to be because we so focus so much on the death. Practically every American could quote the number of Americans who've lost their lives from COVID-19. But that's the tip of the iceberg in many ways because we have literally millions of people now, we're hearing up to a third, could have some lingering symptoms and ranging in severity to a lot of pulmonary issues, even fibrosis on the lungs and chronic shortness of breath, heart arrhythmias due to inflammation in the heart. But the ones that worry me especially are the cognitive deficits. We call it brain fog, which kind of makes it sound like it's not that serious, but it is. You know, people have terrible trouble concentrating, and this is why it's been so devastating because it's been difficult for people to go back to work. And then there is all of the depression that goes along with this. So a huge amount of heavy psychiatric burden associated with COVID-19. On top of that is the other issue that you mentioned, which is the non-COVID effects of all the post-traumatic stress of living under the conditions that people are living with. So this is going to be with us for some time. Thank you for highlighting it.
Yeah, that sometime part. You know, we've been researching this for quite some time. There's a lot of data, but some of it is missing. You mentioned the social issues, the lack of connection and the rest, and how we don't know how long that'll go on. But specifically, these lingering symptoms. Might people deal with this for the rest of their lives? Do we have any way of knowing?
I don't think so. I mean, this is a brand new virus. And, you know, when this virus first, you know, showed up in Wuhan, most of us, including myself, thought it was going to go by the same playbook as other serious coronavirus infections did, which is going to be a serious pulmonary illness with high mortality. But we just never envisioned the neurologic complications, the heart complications, the clotting defects that it's causing, and a terrible coagulopathy, which makes it hard to oxygenate patients, all of the vascular issues, and the neurologic ones were especially surprising for us. But it's real, and it's profound, and remember the impact that this is going to have on our healthcare system and our economy. So as awful as the deaths are and as heartbreaking as the deaths are, that is going to be only that one of many pieces of COVID-19 that will be with us. And it's also a wake-up call for young people that they don't want to get COVID-19 because, you know, again, when we started seeing long-haul COVID, we thought it was mostly of people with severe illness. We're hospitalized now. We're seeing it in young people. And now that the variants are here, even young people with mild illness are having long-haul symptoms.
And before we go, one thing that we're noticing and our researchers are in data all across the country, big cities, small towns, diabetes. It appears from looking at the data that there are diabetes cases directly related to COVID. What do we know?
Yes. So one of the things that we saw early on is this virus can get into the pancreas because the receptor for the virus, the ACE2, the angiotensin converting enzyme receptor, is also in the pancreas, although it's not on the cells, the islet cells ordinarily associated with diabetes. So we're trying to understand, is there collateral damage caused by an immune attack on the pancreas cells that are not ordinarily involved in diabetes, but also attacking the islet cells. So this is a whole new area of research for diabetologists and endocrinologists to understand. But we're seeing what looks almost like type 1 diabetes that we would ordinarily see in kids and teenagers in people with COVID-19.
So much more to learn. We've come a long way, though. Dr. Hotez, thank you so much. Millions of Americans are waiting for financial relief out of this crisis. And now House Democrats are outlining who will get it and how much they'll get. And investigators have found no evidence that Kobe Bryant pressured his pilot to fly in bad weather. What they did find is next. And dangerously low temperatures hitting many parts of our country. They're sticking around and they're on the move. Stay tuned. The investigation of the crash that killed Kobe Bryant and eight others is over tonight. NTSB officials blame one person, the pilot. They say when he flew into the clouds through which he could not see, that he broke the law and likely became disoriented. Call it a crash, investigators said today, but do not call it an accident. Here's CNBC's Jane Wells.
An accident is something that is unforeseen, unpredictable, if you will. Unfortunately, this wasn't.
NTSB investigators methodically laid out what happened the morning of the crash, including this video of the helicopter carrying Kobe Bryant and eight others 1 minute before, heading straight into clouds, speeding at 140 knots.
What was he trained to do at that point? It's very clear that slowing down is
slowing down.
Investigators say pilot Arizabayan ignored his training, violated federal rules, and had no plan B on file if weather went bad. He became disoriented in the fog and lost control. But in a surprise move to some, investigators do not believe a warning system telling Zabayan he was headed toward the ground would have helped.
The pilot doesn't really know which way is up. So this type of system would not aid in that situation. It was beyond the parameters and would likely just be more of a confusing factor than anything else.
In the end, the NTSB believes Zabayan was likely influenced by self-induced pressure to continue flying, in part because he wanted to please his celebrity client. And it also said Island Express needs more oversight of safety management. And it is again recommending flight data monitoring during such flights, which would allow a flight department to see deviations and get involved before a crash happens. So far, the FAA has said it's not worth the cost.
We issue these recommendations when bad things happen. And the FAA has dragged their feet so many times on this issue and others.
They also want more pilot training to recognize disorientation. But here's a surprise. The helicopter that Kobe was in came equipped with a cockpit voice recorder, which was removed by Island Express. And that's okay. The NTSB does not want that to be okay. And the FAA is looking into it. Shep?
Jane Wells, live in Los Angeles. President Biden decidedly not engaging with the ins and outs of the impeachment trial. That's the message from the White House this week.
Joe Biden is the president. He's not a pundit. He's not going to opine on the back and forth arguments, nor is he watching them that are taking place in the Senate.
Instead, he's staying focused on his agenda, they tell us, meeting with the Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen today to discuss his coronavirus relief package. The administration insisting that remains the president's priority. House Democrats now moving forward with a proposal for the next round of disaster relief checks, outlining how big the payments will be and who will get the checks. CNBC's Ilan Moy, live in Washington. Ilan, where do the stimulus talks or checks now stand?
Well, Shep, in the House, lawmakers have started to debate the details of the COVID relief package. And for now, there is no change to who would get the full $1,400 stimulus check. For individuals, the cutoff is still at $75,000. And for couples, it would be for those who make up to $150,000. Now, people who earn more than that, though, would get smaller checks. And if you're a single person who makes six figures or a couple pulling in more than $200,000 a year, well, you wouldn't get a check at all. That is a change from last time around, and this is really a response to the criticism from Republicans and even some Democrats that too much of this benefit went to wealthy households who didn't need it. Now, we are still waiting to see what the Senate will do, but today Democrats vow that they're not going to let the impeachment trial slow down this process. Now, technically, both chambers are supposed to finish writing the legislation just 1 week from today, but Shep, unlike for you and me, there is no consequence if they miss their deadline.
Ilan, it's not just the federal government debating stimulus checks. What are we hearing from the states?
Yeah, that's right. So California right now is debating whether to send out its own $600 stimulus checks. And across the country, cities and states are saying they're not going to wait on Washington to get more relief to their residents. Already, six states and seven cities have approved one-time direct payments. That includes Colorado, New Mexico, and North Carolina, along with Los Angeles, Portland, and Houston. And dozens of other cities are testing out what happens when you send those checks every single month. So, Shep, state and local officials are now calling on Congress to follow in their footsteps.
Ilan Moy, thank you. Investigators released their findings on the origin of COVID-19. Unlikely it came from a lab in China. The conclusion being drawn after a visit to Wuhan. And most people are wearing masks. Some are wearing two. Now, covers for musical instruments to protect people around them when we take a trip around the world. A small step today towards solving a pandemic mystery. Where did COVID originate? Investigators with the World Health Organization now say the virus most likely did not leak from a Chinese lab. a theory pushed by some who served in the previous administration. The WHO's assessment comes after 12 days of investigating in Wuhan, China. The scientists concluded that the virus most likely came from an animal. But that is neither final nor definitive. The lead investigator saying that tracing exactly what the source was will require more research. In Beijing, here's CNBC's Eunice Yoon.
A year ago, this wet market in Wuhan was shut down, feared to be the source of the coronavirus. Today, World Health Organization scientists in the Chinese city for an investigation into the virus's origins said more likely the pathogen was brought in from elsewhere.
It was not just only a cluster outbreak in the Huanan market, but the virus was also circulated outside of the market.
Exactly from where is still unknown, even after weeks of reviewing biological samples and hospital case files. One theory the team expects to study further is an idea promoted heavily by Beijing, that the coronavirus could have infected people there through frozen imported food. But favored most by the team is the scenario the virus jumped from an animal like a bat to another more likely to have been traded at the market, such as a mink or bamboo rat, before infecting a person.
Our initial findings suggest that the introduction through an intermediary host species is the most likely pathway.
A hypothesis the scientists don't intend to pursue, one pushed by the Trump administration that the virus could have come from China's most advanced lab, based in Wuhan, studying bats.
It was very unlikely that anything could escape from such a place. And we also know that when lab accidents happen, they are, of course, extremely rare.
Even so, the WHO's reassurances may not be enough to satisfy Beijing's critics, skeptical the authorities have been truly transparent with the team.
Former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo among those critics who today said he still believes the coronavirus came from the lab. Shep?
Eunice Yoon, live in Beijing. One man's narrow escape as a roof comes crashing down, and more violence on the streets of Myanmar as we go round the world in 80 seconds. Myanmar. Anti-coup demonstrators hit the streets for a fourth day. Police in Mandalay fired water cannons and reportedly used rubber bullets to break up the crowd. Some injuries reported, prompting criticism from the United Nations. Protesters demanding the military step down, accept the results of the democratic elections, and reinstate the designated leader, Aung San Suu Kyi. Turkey. A man's brush with death caught on camera. Happened last night in Istanbul as strong winds battered the city. Video shows the man standing outside a flower shop for a few moments before going inside. And just as he stepped in, wood and debris crashed down on the spot where he had been standing. Thankfully, nobody hurt. Japan. Masks have become part of our everyday lives. Now there's one for musical instruments. This is the Yamashine Nano Filter. Place it on the end of a trumpet, for example. And it catches most of the tiny droplets that come out when musicians blow into their instruments. According to the manufacturer, there's enough space in between to ensure quality sound. A safe way to keep the music playing as we go round the world in 80 seconds. Bitter cold temperatures, Minnesota just one example. There, the thermometer dropping to 25 degrees below zero. And the cold weather is on the move. Weather alert, a massive Arctic blast sending temperatures plummeting in the northern plains and upper Midwest. Wind chills as low as minus 40 to 50 degrees expected in some areas from Montana to Minnesota. Look at these numbers. In weather that cold, doctors warn frostbite could occur in as few as 5 minutes. Forecasters say the frigid conditions could linger for several weeks. In fact, it's so cold that a man in Chicago froze a pair of jeans. Says he soaked his pants in water, and 40 minutes later, they were standing upright. Next time, don't soak them in water. By Thursday, the Arctic blast expected to move slowly south. Storm expected to bring a mix of rain, ice, and snow. 65 seconds left on a race to the finish. Opening statements in the Senate impeachment trial are set to begin tomorrow, noon Eastern. Today was the first day of the trial. Six Republicans joined Democrats and voted to proceed. They rejected the defense's argument that you cannot try a former president. At least one person is now confirmed dead after a shooting at a medical center in Buffalo, Minnesota. Investigators say the gunman is in custody. And the National Transportation Safety Board has now released the cause of the chopper crash that killed Kobe Bryant and others last year. Investigators blame the pilot, saying he should not have flown in such cloudy conditions that he became disoriented before slamming into a foggy hillside. And now, you know the news. Of this Tuesday, February the 9th, 2021, I'm Shepard Smith. Follow us on Twitter at The News on CNBC and stay tuned for Shark Tank next. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.